with Bob McChesney is next.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today on WILL AM 580 here in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live from Campbell Hall. We've got a local show today to talk about the state of the media movement here in Champaign-Urbana and in Illinois, but a story with national and even global implications. We'll be talking about the Indy Media Center, its purchase of the post office, and the forthcoming low-power radio station, WRFU, that will be showing up this fall here in the Urbana landscape. We'll have three great guests in the studio for the live show, so you can call and participate. But before we go to the show, first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
SBC and Verizon successfully hijacked a special session of the Texas legislature and got a bill passed this month that would remove state oversight on phone rates and grant them statewide franchises to offer video services, cutting cities and towns out of that regulatory picture completely. The special session was supposed to be about reworking the state's distressed public school funding formula, but the SBC-Verizon cabal flooded the state house with more lobbyists than there are lawmakers. Texas Governor Rick Perry could veto the legislation, but he could also do nothing and it would automatically become law in a month. If that happens, it could set a dangerous precedent for similar battles in other states. Next up may be Missouri, where SBC lobbyists are scouting for sympathetic lawmakers to carry a similar bill.
In July, the Federal Communications Commission released a report touting U.S. broadband connectivity. But the report contains several flaws that paint a wildly misleading picture of the state of broadband access in America. For example, the FCC's analysis considers an entire zip code wired for broadband if just one customer exists there, when in reality, access to broadband varies block to block in many major cities. The FCC also sets a disappointingly low threshold for what it considers high-speed access, defining a connection as broadband even if it only barely handles streaming video. On a per capita basis, the U.S. ranks 16th in the world when it comes to broadband access, a slip of 3 spots from just a year ago. Americans pay as much as 25 times what the Japanese do for broadband, even though Japan enjoys connection speeds as much as 8 times faster than what's available domestically. Other solutions exist to increase access to broadband, like municipal networks and community wireless projects, but these are facing stiff opposition from phone and cable companies who are lobbying at both the federal and state levels to stop or slow down their growth.
Earlier this month, former FCC Chairman Michael Powell landed a new job. He'll be working as an advisor for Providence Equity Partners, a capital investment firm with a $9 billion stock portfolio involving a variety of global media properties, including MGM Studios, the Warner Music Group, and several cell phone companies, newspaper publishers, and broadcasters. Michael Powell's move from media regulator to media investor continues a long and lucrative tradition at the FCC involving its chairman. Powell's predecessor, William Kennard, left the agency to become a telecom stock jobber for the Carlyle Group. Kennard's predecessor, Reed Hunt, does the same for a variety of investment firms. The FCC chairman before Hunt, Alfred Sykes, headed straight into the employ of the Hearst conglomerate upon leaving office. Dennis Patrick, who preceded Sykes, left for Time Warner, where he ran a corporate division created especially for him, and then founded a tech company during the boom time of the 1990s, which later sold for $125 million. This synopsis only goes back 20 years, but Richard Wiley, who was former FCC chairman in the 1970s, deserves an honorable mention. He's now considered one of the most powerful telecom lobbyists in Washington, D.C., commanding a staff of 75 to push the wishes of his clients, which have included the Gannett Publishing Empire, SBC, Verizon, and Viacom, among many others.
Fake news is big business, but it's not the business it used to be. MediaLink Worldwide, the largest purveyor of audio and video news releases, lost more than $2 million during the first half of 2005. According to the company, the problem is not with increasing public and regulatory scrutiny of truth in journalism, but with the fact that so much actual news has transpired that TV and radio stations haven't had as much time to air paid-for stories. Even so, MediaLink stock is feeling the pain, trading at about $3 per share, down some 40% from 6 months ago, and just a sixth of its value compared with 6 years ago.
And now, here's a Media Minutes Fast Fact. The average American household now spends nearly as much time in front of the television every day as the average American spends at work. The Nielsen Rating Service reports that the average household spends 7 hours and 55 minutes with TV, an increase of 13 minutes from just last year. Broken down demographically, the viewing increase is even sharper. For example, African American households monitored by Nielsen have the TV on for 11 hours and 10 minutes a day, up 47 minutes from last year, the largest increase among any audience segment. Generally speaking, women spend more time in front of the television than men, and adults watch more than children, although that gap is narrowing. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today on WILL AM 580, August 21st, 2005. And we've got a special show, a show we've been planning for quite some time because there's so much happening at the local scene here in the Urbana-Champaign area. And note I use Urbana first. You'll see why in a second. Urbana-Champaign, as many of our listeners know, but perhaps some people podcasting the show might not be familiar with, is one of the real centers of the burgeoning independent media movement that's been taking place in the United States for many years now. The IMC here, the Independent Media Center, was set up in 2000 in downtown Urbana. In May 2005, the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center announced the purchase of the former post office right in the heart of downtown Urbana, with almost 30,000 square feet of space, I think marking the local IMC in Urbana-Champaign as arguably the most dynamic and significant IMC, certainly on a per capita basis in the world, and maybe not even on a per capita basis. The new IMC building, the post office, will house soon WRFU, Urbana's new community radio station, its LPFM station. There is a lot happening in this community, and it's a lot happening not simply of importance to people living in Champaign County or East Central Illinois, but I think it's something that's getting the attention of people around the United States, around the country, the exciting developments here. And we have a terrific group of people here to join me in the studio to talk about it today. Let me quickly run through them and let them introduce themselves. We have to my immediate left Danielle Chenoweth, who's been on the program several times before. Danielle is a Urbana City Council member, has been involved with the Indy Media Center since the very beginning. To her left, Mike Lehman, who's been closely involved with the Indy Media Center and a driving force behind WRFU getting its license. Mike has been on the show before as well. And then we have our first newcomer to Media Matters, sitting to Mike's left, Lindsay Melkai, very active in promoting and organizing WRFU. So we've got a full roster here to talk about events. And before we go into the Indy Media Center and the building purchase and WRFU, let me let each of our three guests give a little more about their background, starting right here with Danielle, a little bit more about how you got involved in this and what you do and what's up.
Thanks. A warm welcome to the podcasters out there. That's something I want to learn how to do at some point. The first instance of indie media for me was in Seattle in 1999, and I actually walked into the Indie Media Center almost by accident and saw this profoundly well-organized group of people.
And this is during the World Trade Organization,
meetings
in November.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In 1999, and I saw this profoundly well-organized group of people, all of whom were getting the word out on the radio that I was, you know, was attached to my head during the entire protest to about why people were protesting, and they helped us to not look like a mob, which is what the mainstream media does to protests. So that was the first instance. And then in Washington, D.C., in protests against the World Bank and IMF in the year 2000, I walked into the Independent Media Center and said, I can scrub floors, I can do web design, and I can do PR for you. Put me to work. And I have never had a job that used me so well as the Indy Media Center in Washington, D.C.
Did you have to scrub floors?
No, actually, I helped redesign the website and some of the some of the kind of current look of the site was some things that I worked on. So I did help move tables, though. So
in your day job, when you're not a member of the city council, you do work in computers. I mean, this is an area you're proficient in.
Yes, I'm a graphic designer by trade, although I've never actually had a single academic class in graphic design. So go figure. I've been doing that for the last 8 years. What's interesting is here locally, there was a person named Greg Brown who was a homeless individual who was developmentally disabled, and he was beaten to death by the Champaign police. And the News Gazette ran an article, which was basically the press release from the police department. No one ever followed up on that story. And I was so upset by that particular story that, to me, that was like what, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. And at that point, I basically called up my friends and said, it's time. We have to do indie media here locally. And so we gathered in my living room, and there was about 12 of us. So mm-hmm. that's the, in terms of indie media, that's kind of how I got
involved.
That's
like 5 years ago that took place, roughly.
Yes, 5 years ago.
And it started the IMC, and let's get to Mike in here, Mike Lehman, in a second. But the IMC started roughly 5 years ago.
Correct.
And downtown Urbana and its old lodgings. And Mike, where do you come into the picture, Mike Lehman? Now, first of all, what are you doing now? What's your day job? Just so folks know what you're up to.
This fall, I'll be TAing several sections of the History 172, U.S. history since 1877. So I'm looking forward to that experience. I'm a historian by trade now, although I used to work in the grocery business. But I had a little change of plan due to some union busting efforts. My primary interest is Cold War history. So I tend to look at the history of independent media as sort of a technological thing. That's one of the areas of my studies is history of science and technology. It's very interesting. And the fact is that technology puts media into people's hands much more easily. I've been a political activist since I was a teenager.
How long have you been in the Urbana-Champaign area?
I've lived here since about 1976.
Oh, so you're a grizzled veteran.
Yes.
No question about it.
I'm sort of a townie who's
now. Yeah, and Danielle, you're approaching townie status.
So yeah, I think this is my
what's the cutoff?
I've been here for
status?
A decade, so 1995.
Okay. And so you've been active, though, Mike, at the IMC,
right,
and also moving now into WRFU.
Yeah. The thing I find exciting is that technology is such that people can make media now. I can remember being a political activist doing Central America work back in the 1980s, and it's like talking about the local media. You know, you just couldn't get a story in. You couldn't tell your own story. They didn't want to listen to your side of things. They wanted to put you in a little slot. And this the independent media movement, I think, allows people to get their stories out, to challenge the other media to do a better job. I think actually we improve all media by doing what we're doing.
Yeah, before we get Lindsay and start talking about WRFU, I just want to talk about one thing that I think pertains to the work both of you have been doing with the Indie Media Centers. There are a number of communities around the country. Urbana-Champaign is not the only one. Asheville, North Carolina comes to mind, Grand Rapids, Michigan, where you've seen a lot of sort of independent media activity around local public access channels, around Indie Media Centers, local media. And it's sort of built sort of an interesting collection where the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts. And it sort of even creates a certain economic dynamic in the community that's actually good for the economic health, not just the political health of the community. Is that something we're finding here in Urbana, Danielle?
Well, what's interesting is that I've talked to a number of people who are professionals who have decided to stay in Champaign-Urbana after school instead of leave because the Independent Media Center is here. And so in some ways, there's a lot of talk on campus of trying to keep professionals from leaving the area and instead having them stay and produce for the economy in the area. And mm-hmm. so we're seeing that with the Independent Media Center. It's kind of a surprising offshoot of what has happened. The other thing is that we have a barn raising that's coming up, which we'll talk about, but we're going to have, 300, 400 people here. They're going to stay in the hotels. They're going to eat the food. I mean, it's like a convention and has the economic consequences on the community of any convention.
I think our buying the post office is sort of another angle on this, too. We attract a number of people to downtown, and all those people coming through, they stop, they spend their money other places and stuff. It adds to an exciting after-hours scene, too. Everybody kind of looks at Champaign and they forget, well, Urbana actually has a pretty good sort of entertainment nexus with the arts that's going on. And that's another thing that we emphasize. It's not just media, but the arts. And we're hoping with our new facility to be able to put in a nice performance area. This has worked well for us before. It's been very synergistic between folks that do media, folks that are into arts, folks that just want to find an intellectually stimulating crowd to hang out with.
I'm sorry.
We've got Lindsay Melkai here chiming in finally.
Our performance space is also going to be a pretty large non-smoking venue, and it's an all-ages space too, which that's pretty unique for Champaign-Urbana. There's not too many other places where you know, all sorts of people can come and they don't have to deal with smoke and drinking. Some people, that's not their scene. So.
Or sexual harassment, for that matter. We're pretty strict about that, and that's not the case with the local area bars.
Lindsay Melkai just spoke up. Lindsay, a little bit about your background, if you would, for our listeners.
I'm a recent graduate of the University of Illinois. I have a bachelor's in animal sciences, and right now I'm a lab technician in a genetics lab at the university. So I have absolutely no background in radio, but that's the great thing about the Independent Media Center is you don't have to. They teach you. You can learn. I joined the radio station project probably in the fall, September, October, something like that. And, you know, no one told me, hey, can you do this? You know, I was just like, hey, I want to do this. You guys need to make money. All right. I'm going to put together this fundraiser. You guys need to tell people what you're doing. Okay. I can work on that. And that's how the Independent Media Center works. It's all about you learning things and doing things on your own. And just if you have an idea, there's no one to say, maybe you shouldn't do that, really. It's you provide the force behind what's going on.
So there's a lot of energy out there. If you've got a desire to do some hard work, it's a place you can do it and see the fruits of your labor.
There's plenty of projects that we need more people for. There's always something that you can get involved with at the Independent Media Center.
You're listening to WILL AM 580. This is Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, August 21st, 2005. We're talking about the local Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center, the forthcoming low-power community radio station, WRFU 104.5 FM, which has been licensed and is in the process of gearing up to go on air. And we're talking with some of the key people who have been behind both these enterprises. And we're also talking about the Indie Media Center's purchase of the historic post office in the heart of downtown Urbana, part of really a transformation of the entire center of the city of Urbana that's rather dramatic, to put it mildly, and pretty exciting. If you'd like to call in and speak with our guests, Danielle Chenoweth, Mike Lehman, or Lindsay Melkai, the number here, 333-9455, and our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And I want to remind listeners who might be listening online who say, well, you know, I don't know anything about Urbana-Champaign. Why should I care about this stuff? That this is Urbana, and I can tell you this from my own experience, is a national leader in trends that are emerging in other places. This is really a pioneering area with things like an indie media center playing a prominent role in a community and building out low-power radio and building out spaces for art and performance and for people to get together and socialize. This is something that's starting here, but it's a movement that's a national and global, for that matter. So it's of great importance, I think, to everyone in our listening audience. Let's talk a little bit more, if we can, Danielle, about the building purchase. I mean, when I first heard about this, it would be sort of like someone saying that, you know, Mike Lehman just bought Microsoft. And I'm going, how does the IMC, you know, which is this, you know, like, let's face it, a volunteer-run,
consensus-based organization, yes.
You know, with, you know, no one, it's not like rolling in money by any means. You look at the office and it looks like, you know, something out of like the 70s. How does it buy this historic, enormous, you know, beautiful building in the heart of downtown Urbana? Can you walk us through that deal?
Persistence, I think, is the key word here. A number of years ago, the post office was on the market. It was on the market for $390,000. We didn't have a capital campaign at the time. We had a little bit of cash in the bank from memberships and fundraisers, but few thousand. So we, at that point, thought, we want to buy the post office. And it seemed like a crazy idea, but we like crazy ideas. And so we continue to hold on to this crazy idea that we were going to buy the post office. There was a number of full price offers on the post office, and the post office never really got back to those people. They were interested in selling it on their terms, or that was it. And even if you wanted it on their terms, it seemed like getting through the bureaucracy to get to them was difficult. So we had a couple of people, Mike being one of them, who persisted in trying to, Sasha Meinrath being another, in trying to find who's the person, who you talk to purchase the post office. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of finally, we did our investigation, started out locally, went to Chicago, ended up there's a person in Boulder, Colorado, who is the person you have to talk to. Got in touch with that person, you know, talked a little bit about could we buy it for a dollar. No, they're not interested. So last fall, we were going to rent another space. And right as we were about to move and rent into another space, our mm-hmm. membership said, what about the post office? We wanted to buy the post office. And at that point, I said to myself, you know what? We need to make this post office fantasy go away because it's holding us back. And, it, you know, so I'm going to take a membership. Do I have permission to try to figure out what the heck's going on and get a yes or no answer? Yes, I got the permission to do that. Mm-hmm. So I contacted the person and I said, we're ready to buy the post office right now. And we have to be on the air with our radio station on May of next year. This was October of 2004. Mm-hmm. So either sell it to us or don't, basically. And I get, and a week or two later, I get this email that says, well, we might be interested. Okay, so now we have to figure out what to do. So then I'm on them for 3 months, no contact. So I'm like, okay, we're back to square one. They're not going to respond. Calls, emails, no contact. So the first of this year, I actually made it my New Year's resolution to buy the post office because I just thought, you know what, I'm going to do the best I possibly can to see if I can make this happen. And I said, membership, you know, do you want me to do this still? Yes. Okay. So I made a phone call on January 3rd and I said, look, you have to be in contact with us regularly. We are super serious about buying the post office. We want to basically buy it at market rates. We want to buy it on your terms, like, you know, let's go. And so they started taking us seriously. And so we actually started out at, they started at 360. Don't ask me how they went from 390 to 6, but our starting rate was 360. And in the end, we negotiated them down to $218,000.
Who did that negotiating?
That was me. I do negotiations in my job a lot, and I do negotiations as a council member a lot. And so, you know, yeah, I talked to them. Well, thank you. And so we basically worked at this, and I had, you know, a freak out session every 2 days thinking that we weren't doing it right. But in the end, our lawyer said, you can't close by May 5th. Our banker said, you can't close by May 5th. And we closed on Cinco de Mayo, which is also Karl Marx's birthday, by the way. We closed on the post office on that date, and we got a very good price for it. And the post office got a great deal as well because they get 10 years of free rent, which is a value of about about $400,000 in free rent over 10 years.
And so if someone who's been using the post office in downtown Urbana for the past 10 years wants to go to use that post office, it's still there, the exact same place?
Yes, it's exactly the same place.
So they won't even necessarily notice anything.
Well, what they'll notice is it, as of November of this year, if you walk into the post office in downtown, if you go right, you'll go into the post office. If you go left, you'll see hopefully somebody on the air on WRFU. You'll go through this big archway into this space that's about 3,500 square feet. There'll be a big stage. There'll be a library with a kind of meeting room space. You'll look in the back and there'll probably be some retail space that's selling a cafe kind of related thing. And you walk in and you are presented with all of these different things that you can do. There'll be public access computer terminals. There'll be studio spaces in the basement to produce video, produce radio, to produce print pieces. You can go and help out with the Books to Prisons project, which is basically reading letters from prisoners and hearing what kind of books they want to read and packing up those books and sending it to them. You can go down to the Artist Collective and there'll probably be people there painting and doing things. There's a wood shop. There's a silk screening space, and hopefully there'll be a photography studio as well. So that's kind of what what the picture is going to be, you know, later this year.
Now, this all costs money, a lot of it at least, especially the purchase of the post office. I mean, can I ask where the – even though you got the price down, it's still, you know, a lot of money, 200 plus grand. Where does that money come from?
Thanks to our local community who helped us raise $75,000 in our capital campaign, we were able to put down 20% on the post office and actually have enough money left over to repair the roof and do some other fixes.
So this is really a classic case of the community coming together.
Absolutely.
To do this.
It was actually it's incredible in some ways. On the other hand, you think, well, it means that we're serving a need in the community, and the community has seen that, and they have said, yes, we like what you're doing, and we want to support it. So, you know, kudos to them and kudos to us, and we were able to put these needs and offers together to make something happen.
You're listening to Danielle Chenoweth, Urbana City Council member, who's been instrumental in the formation of the IMC and the IMC purchase of the post office here in Urbana. You're listening to Media Matters here on WILL AM 580. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Also in the studio with Danielle Chenoweth and me are two other people who have been instrumental in the IMC and in WRFU, Mike Lehman and Lindsay Melkai, and they're going to have a chance to talk in a second. If you'd like to have a question or comment for our three guests discussing the media scene in Urbana, the number here is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. I want to talk with Mike and Lindsay about WRFU and the barn raising that's coming up. But first, let's go to our phone line, see what we've got here. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was calling to ask about the artist collective. That just is a little bit more explanation about that. Is that rentable space? Is this just public space where you can come in and, like, work or display things? I'm a little curious about that.
Well, we have just started an artist collective. It's called Cherry Alley Artists, and we've actually only had two meetings. We have 10 artists at this point who are involved in some way, and 7 of them have studio spaces. In the post office space, we have spaces for private studios where you have a door that kind of locks and it's totally private. And we also have a 2,300 square foot space with different studios that kind of have these partition walls. So I'm a member of that collective, and I have one of the studio spaces with the partition wall.
Are you an artist too, Danielle?
Yeah, I'm a painter.
I apologize for not announcing that earlier.
No, that's fine. Actually,
what don't
I haven't.
You do? I mean, you negotiate deals, you run the city council, you're the vice mayor.
I haven't been painting for a long time, so that's actually one of the reasons why I was like, you know what? It's time to start painting again. So it is open. We have different levels. People can be members without having space, and that basically means you can come use this common space. There's multiple tables, and there's shared art resources. You can have friends come in and make art with you, et cetera, and you don't have to have space, or you can actually rent part of the space, and I'd be happy to talk to you more if you're interested in taking a tour.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. And I want to talk about the bar a few, but first Danielle, or in this case, Mike, if someone's listening to this and they want to learn more about the Indy Media Center, maybe have a question like this caller just did, or maybe they want to get involved in doing journalism or getting involved with the radio station, what should they do?
The easiest thing to do is to check out a couple of websites. One is the main IMC website, www.ucimc.org. There's a link at the top that says volunteer, and that lists all our working groups, their meeting times, their email list. There's a lot of information there. Just take a look there. If there's something that interests you, drop an email to the appropriate list or come to a meeting. All our meetings are open to the public. RFU also has a link there at the top. The RFU website is www.wrfu.net or radiofreeurbana.org if you'd like to type a little further. But that'll get you there. That also lists how to make a show proposal. It lists the preliminary lineup we have there. There's a lot more information. Our meetings are the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 8 o'clock at the IMC.
In the post office now.
Right, right. And that's the Elm Street entrance. It's the north side of the building. There's about 5 steps down to the basement door. Just go through that, and the IMC door is right ahead of that.
You can also send an email to info@ucimc.org. That's just for general information.
Okay, that sounds like what people need to know. For folks not familiar with downtown Urbana, that is right next to Lincoln Square Mall, to the immediate north of Lincoln Square Mall.
It is. It's just south of the Champaign County Courthouse and just west of the Federal Courthouse. We're right there in the seat of power, so to speak, somehow or another.
All right, very good. Well, let's talk a little bit about WRFU.
Sure.
I mean, it's a low-power FM station. A lot of our listeners might not be familiar with low power radio.
Yeah,
what's the difference between that and what we're doing here, or what WEFT, our sister station, does?
A large part of it is the size of audience you're going to reach. Low power means you have a lot less power. We're limited to 100 watts and 100 feet tall in terms of how tall our antenna can be. This will mean that we'll probably reach all of Champaign-Urbana, with a few exceptions maybe on the far west side of Champaign. These stations were set up in a new licensing scheme by the FCC, which had basically gotten away from granting low-power licenses to educational institutions, community groups, and stuff like that back in the late 70s. People said, well, you know, you're letting all this media consolidation happen. What about the rest of us, just ordinary folks that want access to the media? So these licenses began to be issued in the year 2000. There were a number of groups that applied for them locally, and we managed to pursue this license, and they finally granted a construction permit. Ordinarily, these run out after 18 months, but because they kind of bobbled the ball at the FCC and didn't get themselves organized, they put a tremendous burden on groups that were sort of coming together to build a radio station. All of a sudden, you have 18 months to build it after not hearing anything from the FCC for 3 or 4 years. In our case, we bought a new building right about the time we had to be on the air. We originally needed to be on the air by June, but they allowed us to appeal. We got an extension of the construction permit to a year from this December. But we're actually hoping to be on the air November 11th through the 13th in a big construction event that will be a regional level gathering of people interested in how to get on the air, how to make media, how to do about anything in terms of the media.
Lindsay Malkai, why don't you tell us about that event that's coming up November 11th to 13th?
November 11th through the 13th,
and it's what we call a barn raising, right?
Yeah, we're going to be working with a national indie radio organization called Prometheus Radio. And if you want more information about them, you can look them up at PrometheusRadio.org. They're one of the major groups that were involved in getting the FCC to give out these licenses to community groups. And they're going to be kind of organizing on the national level, workshops and helping to get the word out nationally to draw people to our town to help us build.
But what exactly are people, when you hear of a barn raising, it's like a bunch of people getting out and actually building a barn.
Yeah, it's going to be the actual construction. We need to construct our studio. We need to put up our tower. All of our, you know, our things need to be wired together and tested. We're going to have volunteers come and do all of that. And
I mean, do you have some people who know what they're doing? Like, if I was there, I'd probably destroy this. You'd have me scrubbing the floors.
You could do that if you want.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off air.
We have a bunch of people in our group right now that are equipment heads that, and some people that are just learning right now about equipment stuff. So we have some expertise in our group right now. Also, a lot of that is going to come from Prometheus Radio Project.
And they've done a bunch of these. I know they just did a big one in Northampton a few weeks ago.
This will be the first major one that they've done in the Midwest. As Lindsay noted, we actually probably have enough technical capacity to put it on the air here. But the idea of these is to get people together and show them how easy it is to do it themselves so that other people can go out to their communities and put up media in various fashions. And it'll be more than just radio. It'll be all kinds of media. We have a local wireless project that's putting wireless internet connectivity at the community-based level.
Now, we've had shows on that, a couple of them. Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Yes, yes. They're going to be
involved. You were on
in
one of those shows, Mike. Danielle certainly was, too. So this is getting incestuous here.
At the end of the barn raising, the goal is to actually stream RFU over the web through the community wireless cloud that exists and will continue to grow in downtown Urbana.
You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live August 21st, 2005. We've got three terrific guests in the studio talking about the Urbana-Champaign Indie Media Center, the new low-power FM station WRFU, and all the activities and the hustle and bustle that's sort of taking over downtown Urbana today. Our guest, Danielle Chenoweth, the Urbana City Council member, Mike Lehman, who's been active in all these things, and Lindsay Melkai, who's been singularly active in promoting and organizing public attention around the forthcoming low-power radio station. If you want to call in with a question, the number 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455, and we have a caller from Indiana. Let's go to the phone lines. Indiana, you're on the air.
Hello. I think there's three things. One, I'd like to know your frequency. Number two, you mentioned about having a website. Are you going to have streaming so people like me over here in north central Indiana can pick you up off the website? And number three, when this all started, there was tremendous pressures from the large media groups to stop this completely, and they almost pulled it off. And I was wondering if you had any problems within the area of Champaign-Urbana from other FM stations not wanting you on the air. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Clark. And I assume, in fact, I know what he's referring to, is these LPFM licenses.
Yes.
That when the movement came along and the Prometheus led the fight, as Lindsay mentioned, in the late 90s and 2000 to get legalized low-power FM stations, the existing commercial and public broadcasters were not exactly excited about the idea of having new broadcasters on the dial, even though there was open space, and fought it tooth and nail. But finally, there's been some openings, and we've gotten several hundred of these stations licensed. Mike, in your work, was this a problem you faced?
No, actually, I think here locally we have a very cooperative relationship, I think, amongst at least the community base, the educational base stations. Probably the station that's most like us is WFT 90.1, a community base station that's been on the air full power for over 20 years now.
It's in the heart of downtown Champaign.
It sure is. In a certain sense, we're a little bit like them, but our whole point in putting the station on the air was not to compete with other folks that are like us, but to expand the availability of media to people. One of the things is that we intend just to do fundraising for basic equipment. Because we're associated with the IMC, a lot of our overhead really is relatively cheap. We intend to be on the air once we're on the air for a couple $100 a month, and we won't have to do fundraising at the level that other people do to sustain their infrastructure. The other thing is we intend to train people to be on the radio so that somebody waiting for a slot on WEFT or maybe here at the university who's thinking about a radio career, something like that, they could come and get involved, and then down the road they might actually have the skills just to sort of step right into something that's a little bit more professional. But the whole point of it is to expand the availability of media to other people. Our frequency will be 104.5 FM.
104.5. Yes. And again, if you just go to that website, I think UC IMC, all the information will always be readily available there. One thing that's worth noting, and you may well be aware of this, Mike, is the research shows that communities with multiple nonprofit and non-commercial stations do not detract. They aren't competing with each other. Yeah. They expand the pie, and they actually reinforce each other, and the percentage of listeners for all those stations goes up as more are added.
Yeah.
That's one of the striking features of the research.
There's a tremendous hunger out there for independent media. Because so much of the media consolidation that's going on has led to this homogeneous sort of slotting of certain formats. And there's all these people out here who say, hey, I got 40 stations and there's like about five different things to really listen to. They want alternatives, and that's what's really driving the demand for this, I think.
So, Lindsay, tell me, is that if I turn on WRFU come November, is it going to sound just like this or WEFT? I mean, what's it going to sound like? What are the shows going to be like? Who decides what goes on the air?
Well, our selection process is consensus-based, just like everything at the IMC. You can get a show by filling out a proposal online or coming to one of our meetings. But we basically don't turn anyone away. There's not really like a interview process necessarily that you have to go through. Your show just has to fit within our mission statement, which I'm not sure what our mission statement is off the top of my head, but you can find it on our website, wrfu.net.
You haven't committed it to memory yet?
No, not yet. Okay. It's basically, we're arts, promoting the arts and things like that. I'm not quite sure what it is.
I think the most significant thing is we promote a vision of social justice and equity. And I think it's a big, broad door to get through. It's easy to get in.
But, I mean, that means not anything goes. So if, like, someone comes in and wants to do a white supremacist show, they're not going to be making it to the airwaves.
We might not be probably accepting that proposal. but right now we have a variety of talk and music shows planned. We've got everything from a Puerto Rican music show. We've got Scandinavian music show, drum and bass music, if you're interested in that. We have a show with some people that are creating their own sound art. I'm not quite sure what all that entails, but it sounds kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be people talking about spirituality, world news. Just, you can see our full timetable on our website, but it's just, our schedule is going to be programmed by the people that join. Mm-hmm. So
it's all community people doing their own shows.
Yeah.
Piping stuff in from, you know, San Antonio, Texas.
Well, we will be using some, I guess, we have a group called Traffic, which is going to fill up, hopefully, with automation times when we don't have live people available. But this will be stuff requested in the community, and it'll be stuff that's probably not available elsewhere in the community over the air. So there'll be some stuff that's from outside the community, but stuff that the community doesn't have ready access to. So that's one of the things we're trying to meet that need with.
It's also the case currently that you have to buy cable to listen to the local government meetings, Champaign-Urbana, school boards, etc.
You have to have cable TV.
You have to purchase for at least $12 a month. And I feel strongly that that kind of information should be accessible over the radio for free. If, you know, dial in and you can listen to it. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to provide those kind of public service things as well.
Can we carry live over WRFU? That'll really boost the ratings.
I don't know if we'll do live because that's pretty prime time, but I do think it's something that should be rebroadcast from both of the cities, because it's amazing. It's actually amazing how little people know about what local government is doing on their behalf. It's frightening at times, and that needs to change.
Yeah. In fact, Danielle Chenoweth, who we've just been listening to, is an Urbana City Council member. You know, one of the things Urbana has is a public access channel, and it's sort of loosely linked to this broad collection of nonprofit, non-commercial, community-based media that have emerged here in Urbana-Champaign in the last several years. What's going on with that channel? You're on the city council. I know there's been a lot of talk about it over the past few years.
Yeah, when I first got on city council, actually, I've lived here for 10 years, and I got on council 5 years ago and found out, surprise, we have a public access TV station. I had no idea. How many members do we have? Like four. is it being used? No. And so I got on the cable commission, and I got on the UPTV commission. We started talking about this, and we now have 60 members on public access, an expanding time slot for it.
You mean I could join and you can become
a
member?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we got rid of the cost to be a member. So it's free, and you can bring a tape in to the Urbana City Council chambers, 400 South Vine Street at Illinois and Vine, and say, I'd like to become a member and I'd like you to broadcast this tape. It could be a tape about solar homes. It could be a tape about low-power radio and the history of the struggle for low-power radio. You could also have produced it, or it could be something that you downloaded. You can find, we have two dishes on the top of City Hall now, and if you find programming on those dishes you'd like to see, you can request that programming and then it will be slotted in. So that's what's happening right now. The future of public access, and I feel strongly, having kind of, I'm a newbie to public access, and having watched this over the last 5 years, is I feel that public access should stand alone and be operated by the community through a board of directors and through a nonprofit, and that it should continue to receive franchise funds, but it should not actually be coupled with a government or an education channel. And the reason why that is because government program, oftentimes when something is coming over the air on a government channel, and it's public access, it seems like the government is responsible for it when it's not. So it blurs these lines between, you know, free speech, open public access, anyone can do it, and kind of government sponsored programming. And so I feel like they need to be separate channels, separate
Now is this an issue that's coming up here in Urbana, or
correct.
Is this a hypothetical concern.
It's not hypothetical because our franchise is coming up, and we refranchise every 10 to 15 years. So it's a pretty big opportunity for us here locally to say, hey, you know what? We want to stand alone. So I serve on a public access committee of the CU Telecommunications Commission, which is both cities. Mm-hmm. And that committee has ascertained at this point that we need a standalone channel. This is not something that I just came up with. It's kind of a consensus amongst this group. And so the plan is to on August 29th of this month at 4 p.m.
Yeah, week from Monday for those marking it down their calendar.
Yeah, in the Urbana City Council Chambers, which is 400 South Vine Street, Urbana, Vine in Illinois, you can come and find out more about public access TV. The future of public access TV will be surveying people and hearing from the community. Is this something that you want? How would you use it for your mm-hmm. nonprofit organization, as an individual, as an artist, as a documentary film producer? How would you use this resource? And so we want to hear from you, because if we don't hear from you, it seems like people don't want it. So it's only if people want it that it will happen. And so people have to manifest their desire. And this is one of the venues to do that, is the August 29th
meeting. Well, if I can say so, I have cable. So I'm going up and down the dial. That public access channel is like, it's at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue on your TV. I mean, it gets a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah.
You just can't
it's
help
channel
but see
6.
It.
For channel those who 6. Are here locally, and UPTV is channel,
I mean,
6.
This is an extraordinary opportunity.
And you do not have to live in Champaign or Urbana to actually put something on the air.
We're listening to Danielle Chenoweth, Mike Lehman, and Lindsay Melkai today on Media Matters here on WILL AM 580. We're discussing the local Indie Media Center, its purchase of the post office in downtown Urbana, and the forthcoming low-power FM radio station WRFU 104.5 FM, which will be having a huge barn raising November 11th to 13th. For information on all these things, just go to the Indie Media Center website and you can follow the links, ucimc.org. Mm-hmm. We have callers waiting. I want to get to them. If you want to join them, the phone lines are open, 333-9455, and the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to line 4. Eureka, you're on the air.
Yes, 2 technical questions and 1 general, and I'll get off the air. What is the frequency again and your range? And number 2, I was reading in Monitoring Times, which is kind of one of the standards in shortwave radio, a little blurb which said that there's going to be a possible new shortwave radio station with a tower around Champaign, which would be like Radio for Peace International, which used to broadcast from Central America. You know anything about like that? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah, okay. Mike Lehman's already eager lining up to answer those.
Well, I'm a fellow Monitoring Times reader, so I know what he's talking about there. The first question.
The subscription base here.
Yeah, well, it's a great magazine if you like radio. The frequency, again, is 104.5 FM, and you won't likely hear us over there. I know there's a low-power radio station somewhere in western Illinois, Macomb or something like that. I doubt if you can hear them from Eureka, though. But the station you're talking about is actually one of the people that's helping us, Bill Taylor. He's involved with that. Radio for Peace International started up in the 80s, referring to Central America again and the wars that went on then, and operated for a long time in Costa Rica, and due to a number of factors was shut down there. They're actually thinking about and trying to get happening putting that station on Bill's farm near Monticello. It's a project that's going to take a lot of infrastructure. Just bringing in the amount of electricity to put a 50-kilowatt shortwave station on the air is quite an undertaking. This is being actively explored. I believe there's some references in the Monitoring Times article I don't have in front of me for more information on that. But, yeah, hopefully maybe Radio for Peace will actually come to Central Illinois. It will be another part of the equation.
That would be exciting. Now, I know that our station here, WILL AM 580, its license calls for the power of the station to be turned way down once it gets dark, because then the signal travels much further and there'd be interference with other stations. During daylight hours, we're a much stronger station. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our listeners know that at nighttime you can't pick us up, but during the day we're easy to get through a large part of the state of Illinois and western Indiana. Will that be the case with these low power, with WRFU? Will it have to tune down its power at night?
No. Basically, the way they have it set up is the low power protects the other frequencies. That was part of the argument that the National Association of Broadcasters and some of the other commercial stations made, was that we would somehow interfere with our puny little matchstick 100 watts with their 50 kilowatts and things like that. But it's just not the case. You might actually hear us in Rantoul if you're lucky, but that's probably probably about as far away as you'd get a signal.
It's still pretty impressive how much ground you can cover
with
low power.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
it's
you know, pretty much seeing most of the county, it sounds like, or at least certainly the Urbana-Champaign area.
Well, it's like seeing a 100-watt light bulb from the edges of town. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go back to the phone lines now.
Finally, our
line
prayer
one,
is working
Urbana,
for us.
You're on the air.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm wondering whether you've given any thought in your programming for RFU to include the English language programs of the states that U.S. imperialism blocks and jams on shortwave. And I'm thinking especially of Radio Havana, Free Territory of the Americas, and we could add Brazil and Venezuela, Al Jazeera, and a bunch. And thank you for taking my call.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Danielle, I see you furtively taking notes. Is this something that's come up before?
The only thing that's come up is I really want to hear the Venezuela radio that the government's setting up. But I don't have an answer to that. Maybe Mike or Lindsay can answer that.
Lindsay's pointing towards Mike.
Well, all I could say is we have a wide variety of programming. It really depends upon who shows up and wants to put it on. As I mentioned, we're going to have a group that will be devoted to doing the automated portion of the broadcast. Certainly, this is one of the things that could be included in there. I would see no problem with that. One of the things, then, of course, is that people have to show that interest, so it's another reason to get involved. One thing I can point out for people that want more information about us rather than just talking, listening to us talk here today or visiting the website is we'll be out in the community this week for a couple of big events. One is Quad Day on the University of Illinois Quad. That begins around 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning. It's coming up here in a couple of days, and it's a great time to show up. We'll have a booth there, and you can ask more questions there.
Also, this will be for the radio station or for the IMC or both?
For both. And then we'll also be at the Urbana Sweet Corn Festival, and that's the upcoming here Friday afternoon and evening and on Saturday from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. this upcoming Saturday. So you can stop by our booth there.
And that's in the heart of downtown Urbana?
Right there. We'll be right where it's happening.
You go to downtown
where the
Urbana,
new IMC is.
Yeah, you can't miss it if you go to downtown Urbana.
I would urge the caller to get involved and make Radio Havana, Venezuela, and Al Jazeera happen on WRFU if that's what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Then come make it happen.
We're also out at the farmer's market most Saturdays if you want to drop by. We have a booth there. We're selling T-shirts and also trying to raise money for our barn raising. Basically, we still need some more equipment for what do we need? A tower mast?
Yeah, basically a tower and a little bit of studio equipment. But we have all the transmitter, the antenna, processors, things like that. So we're in pretty good shape, but there's still a few things that remain.
Danielle, you're in the city council. You've been involved in negotiations around the IMC, as we've talked about. Obviously the artists and the hippies and the left-wingers and the free thinkers of Urbana think this is wonderful and great.
Where are the hippies? I wondered that when I moved here in 95.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Ex-hippies.
Okay, ex-hippies. Yeah,
which,
I know some of
which
those.
I can qualify, I think. they all think this is great. How about more traditional, mainline, conservative people in the community? Because Urbana is a heterogeneous community. Small business owners, how have your dealings with IMC been with those communities? Communities not traditionally associated with indie media centers. Lindsay
can
looks
I
like she wants
that
to.
Actually,
yeah, please do, Lindsay.
In doing the public relations for the radio station, I was just walking around town picking up every free newspaper I could find, that also included gun news. And we did end up getting an article in Gun News, and I had kind of a back and forth with the author of the article, and he was like, well, in the article he was talking about how he was just talking about those crazy left wingers kind of, and I wonder if we can get a show on WRFU. I doubt it. They probably wouldn't let us. And I emailed him back and I told him, if you want a show, the IMC is going to put its money where its mouth is and come get a show. Set up a programming group. You need two people. Here's our website. If you want to do it about gun issues, gun safety, whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter what the people at the IMC think about your politics. You should come do a show. But I haven't heard back from him yet.
Maybe he's listening today.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But we talked to someone at the farmer's market, too, that was affiliated with Gun News and had read that article and stuff. So Yeah, I don't know. I think they were interested, but they didn't come through on it, so I don't.
We're a pretty open-minded bunch, quite frankly, and we don't have a narrow vision of what communications is in, in communities. I mean, obviously, we tend to emphasize the progressive, things like that, things that emphasize social justice, but we're not out there to, you know, say, well, a particular point of view is not to be heard, because a lot of what we do is two-way interaction. A website's particularly good for that. People can talk back and forth. You know, somebody can throw something out there. I think a lot of times people don't want to expose their ideas to that two-way interaction is part of it, but we're not there to put roadblocks really in front of people.
And Danielle, you, of course, on the city council deal concretely with these issues all the time. What's your experience?
Well, a couple of things. So first off, I know that the mainstream news watches us, and we help to get things into the mainstream news because we break stories.
The IMC, you're
That's correct. About. Mm-hmm. So I actually do a little test where sometimes I'll post something to a website. I'll call up some of the journalists that I know and say, hey, did you hear about this? Oh, yeah, I saw that on the IMC website. So they've already seen it within hours of me posting it. So that's an interesting piece. We also have talked about we share a boundary with Lincoln Square Mall, a vacated alley. And so I've talked to the owner of Lincoln Square and said, hey, you know, maybe we could collaborate on events. We could have things of mutual benefit in terms of moving traffic through our two spaces. He's very open to that. He'll be meeting with us in the future. The IMC has actually been a member of the Urbana Business Association. We support locally grown businesses, and we think that kind of helps to counteract the rising tide of big box stores and kind of impersonal communications. And so we consider ourselves to be local, embedded in the community, very open, very tolerant, and interested in interacting with all kinds of people. And I think RFU, when people hear RFU on the air, they're going to hear lots of different languages. They're going to hear a lot of different viewpoints.
Well, let's talk. We only have a minute or two left, and I do want to let our listeners know that the Independent Media Center here in Urbana-Champaign does a lot more than what we've talked about. We've just touched on sort of a very superficial covering of some of the activities going on at the center. Maybe give a sense, Mike, started with you, of some of the other stuff that the IMC produces that people in the community might be interested in.
People are probably familiar with the Public Eye. That's our monthly newspaper that people see out on the stands. It's free. You can join in, get your stories published. We also have audio and video groups that produce content for WEFT, for instance. They do a news hour over there. Our radio group does. Our video group's produced a number of things and has also assisted other groups in their productions. The Artist Collective has been mentioned, but people were really open to ideas, too. A number of people have come in. Books to Prisoners is an excellent example there where somebody said, you know, we really need to get books to prisoners, and it's the only fair thing to do.
Now, Lindsay, the IMC has been doing the IMC Radio News for WEFT. It's on Mondays, 5:30. Mm-hmm. Is that going to continue, or will that be shifted over now to the Radio Free Urbana station?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's actually only one member of that group right now, and he's going to, I think, start coming to our meetings, and we're probably going to talk about how we can kind of collaborate.
Ooh, there's only one member of the radio news team? That sort of makes it hard to do a newscast.
It's rough in the summer around here in the community. We have had this problem every summer where we have a big group of people and then it dwindles. But actually with IMC Radio News, it appears that we will probably fold that into Radio Free Urbana. And then what we want to do is do collaborations with WEFT, where as we produce certain pre-produced pieces, we can feed things to WEFT. And we'd like to look at doing some headlines for the morning menu at WEFT. So we'll talk about that.
Well, we've only got less than a minute left. So let's parting shots for each of you just to let listeners know if they want to get involved and learn more what they should do. Let's start over here with Lindsay.
Well, we have some fundraisers coming up in September. On September 17th and 18th, we're going to have kind of a music, a very small music festival out in Monticello at the Calix Center. And we're also going to have something at the Cowboy Monkey on October 13th.
Okay.
Come by and visit us at the IMC. It's 202 South Broadway, just on the north side of Lincoln Square. If you want to see or hear something happening, it's up to you. That's the way we work.
Is it safe to go in there, or are you going to throw a hammer at someone and say, get to work?
We'll throw a hammer at you and say, get to work at this point, because there's a lot of work to be done.
There's some hammer work to be done, probably.
Well, there's a couple of things. Yeah. We're in the process of dividing the post office off from the rest of the space so that we can have about 3,500 square feet of space to do performances and poetry and things like that. And so we encourage the community to get involved in visioning session, which we'll be hosting this fall. So stay tuned for that. The second thing is, for those of you who are listening outside of the area, we encourage you to come visit us and actually stay here for a few months. And we're trying to set up this kind of activist sabbatical thing. We actually have a couple of people from IMCs in Gainesville and other places to try to get involved in
visiting
with us. All
right. Thank you so much, Danielle. And again, go to that website to learn more about it, ucimc.org. I'm Bob McChesney. The band's tuning up. That means we've got to clear out. Andrew Boyle, as always, has been a tremendous producer. I'll be back in 167 hours. Thank you.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-80s and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low in the upper 50s and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour during the evening, then becoming light. Tomorrow, partly sunny with the high in the mid-70s and light winds, becoming north around 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. You're listening to WILL Urbana, public radio for Central Illinois. Beginning next month, the Sunday afternoon broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion will be changing frequencies. It will be moving from AM 580 to our companion station, FM 90.9, where it's also heard Saturday evenings at 5. We hope you'll enjoy Tavis Smiley's weekly program, Sunday Afternoons on AM 580. For more information, consult your September Patterns magazine or the FAQ, F-A-Q section, we'll be posting soon on our website. Or you may call or write Program Director Jay Pierce here at the station.